Toronto's very first vapor lounge opened nearly 20 years ago, just as medical marijuana was being legalized in the early 2000s. For almost two decades, this has been a hangout for cannabis users, a tourist destination, located right in the heart of Kensington Market. Every day at 11 a.m., a graffitied garage door goes up, exposing the entrance to the Hotbox Cafe. Today, funk music was the soundtrack as we walk through the door. The first half of this space is where lattes and herbal accessories are sold. The second half is the lounge area, where you can curl up in a chair and vape away. This is a business that's always been operating in the gray area of the law. I'm City News reporter Shauna Hunt, and on the finale episode of The Legal Podcast, I'm going to introduce you to Abby Roach.
I always say, you know, when I started, I was a 19-year-old disabled Jewish woman with dreads. Like, being a woman was like the least of my problem.
She's a ganja groundbreaker and businesswoman extraordinaire. Also joining us is Richard Southern.
So, Richie, did you invest?
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
And how'd that go for you? I don't need specifics.
No, it went good. I mean, and I'm almost out of it. The easy money has been made now. It's over.
I like to call him Richie because he's one of my good friends. He's been on the 680 News business beat for many years and is also a political journalist who's been following the money in the billion-dollar industry of recreational weed. This week, we take a look at the past, present, and future of Canadian cannabis.
So, Abby, when we booked this interview for the podcast, Hotbox Cafe was this thriving vapor lounge, but just a few days ago, you had to make a very tough decision.
Yeah, absolutely. So, in order to comply with all regulations, we've decided to only allow consumption of cannabis either in edible form, because that's allowed, so you can bring your own edibles, or you have to pop out on the street and consume your medicine outside. It's kind of being a big shock to our clientele, but, you know, they're getting over it. The hardest part for us has been, you know, dealing with our cancer patients, or the quadriplegics that come in here, the people who really need this place is not only a place to socialize, but also they need assistance medicating, and we offer that assistance to them. So that's been kind of heartbreaking for me, to be honest.
To me, it's strange because growing up in Toronto, the Hot Box was this sort of like weird space where weed was legal somehow. I know it wasn't, but it was, you know, the cops didn't bother you. You could sit on the patio and smoke a joint. And it was this weird sort of bastion of legality, it sort of looked like to me, right? And it's so strange that now that weed is actually legal, I can't smoke in the Hot Box anymore.
Isn't that crazy?
Weird?
It is insane. I know. So this is something that we've been fighting for years and years and years. And, you know, we've gone through a litany of motions that were passed for us, all kinds of regulatory recommendations and a lot of lip service, really, that came down. We have our full support from the Kensington BIA, from our city councillor, from our MPP 14 division. 100% supports me. I'm actually getting a letter of recommendation from the community officer for my application. But now we have to comply with the Smoke-Free Ontario Act, and it is what it is, right?
And you were saying fines could be $2,000 if people are vaping in the cafe.
Yeah, so it's $2,000 per customer. Ooh. And $10,000 for the corporation.
But there has been talk that there may be some rules down the road regarding smoking inside when it comes to cannabis or vaping inside, right? There's been talk of that, hasn't
there? There's been talk. I don't think smoking or vaping will ever be something that a politician will say yes to. Yeah. So I think once edibles and oils come through, I think is when you'll see the regulations happen for edible cafes. My personal opinion about that, as someone who has served the cannabis community for almost two decades, is I would much rather see you consume from a smokeless vaporizer and be able to know if you're going to react in a funny way or feel nauseous. Whereas with an edible, a lot of people don't understand edibles. It's not a common way to consume, and people will either overconsume or have a weird reaction, and we have to wait a half hour essentially to see if you're going to puke.
And you're talking about what went on, right? Exactly. Here at Hotbox Cafe, I mean, your staff are trained to watch people and know if they're in distress in any way. And your sign coming in, one thing I love, one line I love on it, one of the rules here at the Hotbox Cafe was no sleeping.
Yeah.
So do you get that a lot? Like you actually had to write it on a chalkboard?
We literally had to write it on the chalkboard because right. people just fall asleep, right? They get tired. They burn out. They fall asleep. So, you know, I came to that realization about 15 years ago. It's like we cannot run this place and have people sleeping here. It just doesn't work. So we nudge them and just were like, hey, you want us to call you an Uber?
One thing I need to know, because we never really touched on it, and I don't know your backstory. Take me back to the early 2000s when you started business.
You guys are taking me back.
All the way back. You said you were 19 years old.
I was actually younger than that.
So, how did this become your path and what did your parents think?
I'll tell you the precursor story. So I have only held two real jobs my entire life, both of which I made my own company out of. I worked when I was 13. I handed out flyers on Queen West to for a store called Blue Moon. It was a vintage store. The girl inside taught me how to retail, how to merchandise. I would go in, I would hand in out flyers out front, and then I would go in and fix the place up. And I saw a girl one day. I was on my way to work, and she was sitting at Queen and Soho by the Black Bull, and she was selling jewelry, and I was like, I could do this. So I bought a bunch of beads and I went and I made myself a little 13-year-old kid, and I made myself a little booth. And then I met a woman named Amy who made hemp jewelry. And I met Robin, who owns a Friendly Stranger.
Yeah.
And he was out there vending as well.
He's a good
guy. Excellent. So Robin taught me a lot about, you know, just about like cannabis itself. And Amy taught me how to make hemp jewelry. So Robin would sell me the hemp and I would make hemp jewelry. So my first job was actually selling hemp jewelry on the street on Queen West as a little teenager. I did that for years. And then I got kicked off the street because I didn't have a vendor permit. And I ended up at a Santana concert with all my jewelry. And I was with my friend Bear, who's actually now a part of a Tribe Called Red.
If you know amazing. Them, Bear Absolutely. Witness.
Yeah, yeah, we were just 16 at the time. And we ended up at the Santana concert. And I was like, we got pulled over the door. They saw this big native guy. So, of course, they searched him. They took all our weed. I was like, damn it. Anyway, so we went in and I was like, well, we have no weed. We have no money. I got kicked off the street and you got searched. So I traded. I walked around and I traded my jewelry. My shtick was that I would either sell you a necklace, trade it to you for weed, or, you know, or you could give me something with a cool story.
Savvy business woman from the start.
Savvy. Yeah, so, yeah. Absolutely. So I came back 20 minutes later. I had sold out of all my hemp jewelry. I had, you know, tons of weed. I had tons of money. I had like this weird turtle thing that I still have. It's my good luck turtle that I've had, you know, and I did that. Anyways, time went on and I did that for many years. And then I did, I went to college. I dropped out of art school. I took music management. I managed a reggae band for a minute. And then I took a self-employment course through the Jewish Vocational Services and I graduated. And then at the end of it, I was, you know, a little barely 20-year-old kid and I was eligible for a bank loan for self-employed youth for up to $7,500. So all I needed was a business plan. I was like, okay, so I wrote a business plan for Rotorama, which was going to be a cannabis lifestyle store. They had no idea what I was talking about even.
I came in. I'm so surprised that they gave you a license for that.
This was 20 years ago. Nobody even realized.
They just didn't understand like what you were doing.
I was talking about, but they just saw this little 19-year-old
system.
Kid.
Yeah.
I remember going to the GST office and I said to the man at the thing that he helped me fill out my form and he said, well, what are you going to be selling? And I said, you know, bongs and pipes and like weed stuff. And he was like, okay, glass art. You will be selling glass art. I was like, fantastic. This man created my career, the security guard. Without him, amazing. I wouldn't have a GST number, wouldn't have a BIN number, wouldn't have anything, right? And I opened up with nothing. And then in 2003, I had an opportunity to take over the building that we were in. We had moved from a small location to slightly bigger. And I had gone to Vancouver. I went to a place called Blunt Brothers. I was like, this is pretty amazing. People can just bring their own and sit down and smoke it. That's crazy. Why don't we have this? And then I went to Jamaica and I was like, what? Like, people are just like smoking ganja everywhere. This is the best place on earth. And I came back and we took over the building. I took out a $2,000 IKEA credit card and a $500 Home Depot card. And I had a boyfriend that was very good at the time at building stuff. So I put him to work. And
so
we, yeah, Yeah, and we essentially built like the lounge for nothing. I think $3,000 or something. It was blood, sweat, and IKEA credit cards. Right. That's how we built out the lounge. And the day before we opened, we just, by the grace of God, we just got lucky that there was a court decision that came through, which essentially made the possession of cannabis for everyone in Ontario legal, is what happened, due to complications with medical marijuana and Supreme Court cases. It's technicality. Yeah. So we opened, and you know, we were problem free until 2012, essentially.
Really?
Yeah, until
so no one bugged you. The cops,
did you ever strike a deal with the cops? Did they come in?
No, they come in all the time. Yeah, but I don't have a deal with them. Right. We just like each other. I'm very active in Kensington. I'm very active in my community. I'm now going on my third term elected, or fourth term of the Kensington BIA. So I'm actually an elected official of the City of Toronto on behalf of my community, right? I run a good business, and I bring a lot of... Kensington was a dying neighborhood when we opened, right? Yeah. You know, and I say that with the reality of what it was, right? This was an old market, and the customers themselves were very, very old, and they were...
I think if anyone deserves to get a license to sell, it's got to be you.
I would like that in writing, please. Yeah. You know, so.
Your dream is what? You want to be able to sell cannabis here and have people consume it. That's the dream, isn't it?
That's the dream. The dream is essentially, I would like to say Amsterdam, but actually California has overtaken Amsterdam now. So California, actually San Francisco mostly, has regulations now. They grandfathered in existing lounges when the regulations came in. And they created regulations for dispensaries to actually have consumption rooms. So you can actually have the sale of cannabis and the consumption of cannabis in one area, which makes a lot of sense, because a lot of people don't actually want to take their cannabis home and have it around their children.
And the tourist factor,
and
too,
the tourist,
right?
Factor, tourist factor. You know, yeah, I was talking to a couple of tourists last night, and I pointed them towards the dispensary, and they were like, well, how do I buy it legally? I said, well, as a tourist, you kind of can't, because you don't
it
have...
It could take weeks.
Well, you don't have an address. You don't have an address. Like, you can't get it, right? So they've created a system where you can maybe consume in your hotel room, even though not one hotel has actually made it possible for anyone to consume in their hotel room, and you can't buy it anywhere. So it's not very friendly.
And we had this news just come down recently in the province of Ontario, where we are, where they're only going to have 25 retail cannabis shops open in the spring instead of what was going to be an unlimited number. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's not going to... Is that going to serve the need, you think?
Absolutely not. 25% of Canadians consume cannabis on a regular basis. That's a lot of people. In Ontario, how many people do we have here? That we're bigger than most countries, right? So, and it's a huge, vast piece of land. So for people to be traveling, you know, across and trying to get to retail, it's not going to work. And then it's also going to discourage customers from actually being a legal customer. They're just going to keep buying the way that they've been buying for the last 20, 30 years.
Absolutely. Here in Ontario, or here in Toronto, there are a number of illegal dispensaries still running. And I think right now they're saying, yeah, we're going to stay in business. This is going to be good for us.
People were showing me these mail order things. Delivery, same day delivery.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's booming business.
The black market.
The black market is thriving.
It's booming. People have been consuming cannabis for decades, well, centuries, but as long as people have been alive since they were teenagers, right? And they've been buying it illegally. So again, if we can't transition the illegal market into a legal market, you will never be able to transition the consumer into a legal consumer. And that's the point of legalization.
Do you consider cannabis legal in Canada in every sense of the word?
Technically.
Technically,
it is legal.
But not
really.
Yeah. There's so many rules and regulations around it. It's you can find a way to get it and a place to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. But, you know, you look at alcohol prohibition. When that ended, mm-hmm. the government controlled the sort of alcohol consumption spaces, right? It was impossible to get. You were shamed at every turn of the way. That was the purpose of legalizing, was if you bought alcohol, alcohol, you were shamed. Now I can walk up and down the street and you can buy a beer at almost every other door.
That's a very good point. It is following a lot of that same arc where at first it was very difficult to acquire. You were shamed for doing it. And now it's certainly a much more relaxed. I remember Elon Musk was on a podcast recently drinking whiskey and he took one toke off of a, and the stock in Tesla dropped and people said he's consuming cannabis. Not a word about the whiskey he was
And it was legal.
And it was legal. But not a word about all the whiskey, which is a much more dangerous drug. Alcohol.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then it's funny, the news dropped. And then all of a sudden, Ontario is considering moving alcohol from the LCBO
into corner stores.
Into corner stores.
Right.
So now you've created a system where it's a lot easier for kids, you know, if we're going to go that route, to see alcohol and purchase alcohol, right? If we're using the same stigma and the same mentality towards alcohol, then right? And then you're saying that cannabis can't be sold in age-gated stores with really hard-to-get licenses. That's ridiculous. I had a woman today, I made a comment on a city councilor's page, and this woman replied, and she's like, oh, cannabis is toxic, and bruh. And I'm like, well, you go enjoy a glass of beer and a cup of sugar with that, you know?
Yeah. Right.
Much more dangerous substance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Far
more. But do you think we have gone too far towards cannabis? I was looking at some products out there. There's cannabis everything, and there's a cure-all for everything.
There's a lot of bro science is what we like to call it. But I always say cannabis is going to be a lot like corn. So, you know, right now, the amount of actual corn kernel that we consume is really minimal, right? Like, how many times a week do you sit down with a corn on the cob and munch away? But, you know, you have corn syrup and everything. Yeah. So there's a lot of benefits. We have, an inner cannabinoid system within our bodies already. So the receptors already exist within our body, and that's why cannabis works so well. There's cannabinoids in mother's milk, for example. So babies are digesting, cannabinoids as they're feeding from their mother's milk, right? Our bodies are created to work with this substance. So having that calming appeal or the pain management appeal, these are real things. It's not really bro science. We just have to really, now that it's legal, actually put the financing behind figuring out how do these receptors work, right? So that's really, really important. And I really believe that, you know, in about 10 to 15 years, you'll see cannabis in pretty much everything,
you
right?
So.
From groceries, whether...
And again, the advantage is
well,
what?
Well, if you look at hemp seed, for example, hemp seed is rich in omega-3s and in fibers.
Right.
There's a lot of health benefits to cannabis. Cannabis doesn't just get you high.
People have to get that mentality out.
Exactly. Of it, right? And again, it goes back to stigma, right? So there's a lot of stigma that comes with prohibition, and that is really the hard part. This is why we're seeing a cannabis shortage. This is why we're seeing hardly any stores. This is why we're seeing municipalities opting out.
At the same time, we're only 2 months into legalization. Are we being a little tough on our country and how it's all rolled out? I mean, I think the politicians really approached it with caution, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because there's really no playbook. And of course, there's tons and tons of criticism, which is expected.
And how else could you approach? You'd have to approach
absolutely.
It with caution.
And it goes back to my point earlier, where 25% of Canadians consume cannabis on a regular basis, but then there's the other 75% who will probably never care about it, never look at it, never even think about it. So we, as politicians, like for us, we have to understand that the politicians need to work for everybody. They don't just work for me.
Okay, I want to ask you a question because you've been running this pot cafe for a long time, and you sell food here, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading a lot of interesting things about what legalization around the world has done to the restaurant industry.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd initially think food sales are going to go up if I'm high. That actually hasn't always been the case.
Yeah.
Do you think that legalization in Canada will have a positive or effect on the restaurant industry or no effect at all?
I look at Kensington Market, and since we opened, the amount of fast food restaurants that have opened up around here
are
booming, right?
They're
booming, right?
Yeah.
So I think, business is business. And if an entrepreneur sees an opportunity and knows how to seize it, they'll come in and seize it, right?
We've seen brands. I did an interview recently with Hershey's, and one of their chocolate bars, they've labeled the 425 bar.
The O. Henry bar.
Sure, there's no cannabis in it, but they're sort of trying to play to that group.
Absolutely.
They're just playing explain to the munchie crowd.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, what we have seen, though, in areas that have legalized is alcohol sales have dropped. There's been a certain...
And tobacco.
And tobacco.
Yeah.
So that you could say is a good thing, maybe.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My friend Steve D'Angelo did an interview this morning with the New York Times about the Cronos deal where the makers of Marlboro came in. And, you know, he said it and he was, you know, I love that man. He's so smart. And he said, this is a good thing. We want to see, you know, big tobacco and big alcohol get into cannabis and provide their consumers with a safer alternative.
Well, listen, I've already interviewed Province Brands. So they're selling beer already, but they've come up with, I guess, a cannabis. It's not infused. It's a cannabis brewed beer.
Yeah.
It's different than being infused. And so you would consume it and you would slowly get buzzed as you would with the beer. It's meant to take you through the night of watching a game or being at a bar. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, are those going to be on tap someday?
If I have too many of those, it's the same problem as eating too many edibles.
Exactly. And also it goes into people don't actually understand how our bodies react to cannabis. Right? So the same receptors that take the THC and the CBD and all the different cannabinoids into your system, if there's too much fat, for example, in your edible, that's gonna make your receptors freak out, right? It will bind too much of the cannabinoids into your receptors. And then your body will just go, oh my God, there's too much. Brah. And that's when we think we're overdosing, but we're not. It's just our receptors, there's too much binder, right? So again, there's a lot of research that needs to go into how to properly consume and manufacture edibles. Again, with smoking or vaping, it is very controlled and your body will tell you instantly if it's too much. With an edible or with a drink, again, we have to understand everybody reacts differently and we have to understand how the different binders work as well.
It really is a fascinating science. And I think even a lot of people who have been smoking pot for, I don't know, decades, they don't even... the full effects on the body.
I didn't even know this stuff until I took a course with my good friend Dr. Ira Price, and he taught me all.
Tell
this.
Me about the first time you got high.
It was 1991.
Was it 1991?
Yeah, it was at a Black Crowes concert at G. Ross Lord Park.
Yes,
and I was, I think, 12 or 13 years old. I was in the front row, and I was wearing, I remember, this like frilly like Black Crowes style shirt. If any of you are old enough to remember who these people even are. Anyways, and some old hippie turned around and was like, hey man, you want some of this? It was so out of like a Cheech and Chong movie. And I was like, okay. And I took one puff and I was like, meh, that wasn't too bad. And you know, and it's funny because I grew up in the 90s. I was a teenager in the 90s. So the rave scene was really, really big, you know?
Right.
And as a teenager, like, I'm not shy to say this, I've tried every drug under the sun and I got it all out of my system in my teens. And when I hit my 20s, I was like, yeah, I'm pretty good right now. And I haven't gone back since. I'm now 40. And the other great thing about the rave scene, not to do with cannabis, was that there was no alcohol. So as a teenager, I grew up not drinking alcohol. Alcohol was not cool.
Now, your last name that you say is Roach. That can't really be your last name.
Oh my God, are we going to get it? We're really digging deep now. Yes. Oh my God. So I'll tell you the full story. Okay, so my real name isn't Abby either.
Oh.
So yeah. Mm. But I won't tell you when it is, but I'll tell you how I got there.
Cafe's starting, getting ready for open.
Music is on. We're kicking in. So essentially, when I was a kid, I moved to Canada in 1989, and I have an Israeli name. Nobody could say my name, and I my favorite album was Abbey Road by the Beatles. My mom had bought me the tape, and I didn't know how to speak English, so I was like, well, Abby kind of sounds like my name. I'll go with Abby, and I didn't know how to spell it, so I put it as ABI.
Yeah,
and then later on when I opened, it was 2000, and there was no cell phones. So the only way to find someone was essentially to go in the white pages. And my father...
The olden days.
Back in the olden days with the white pages. So my father and I are the only people in the white pages with my last name. We're the only people in Canada with my last name. And I was like, I don't want people to know who I am. So in Kensington, there's a
band...
You
don't want them calling your dad.
Well, I don't want them calling my dad. I used to get calls from my dad because of the white pages time, right? So... In Kensington, there's an old school punk band called Bunch of goofs, right? Effing goofs. And everyone that has ever belonged to this band since 1975 or 76 or whatever, their last name is Goof. And I was like, you know what? I'll just do the same thing. My store's name is Roacharama, so I'll just go with Abby Roach, and that will be my name.
That's really
right?
cool. I like that.
Yeah. Great story.
You've been in this business for so long. I gotta ask, have you invested in any of these pot stocks?
I don't own one stock of anything.
Why not?
No. Because I'm lazy and...
And it's a scary place to be. The market freaks me out.
It's interesting because back in the day, I remember before the election, when Colorado was going to originally legalize that election, I remember watching, I watch a lot of stock news. I love business news. I watch you a lot. Anyways, and and they said, oh, you should buy pot stocks because Colorado, Alaska, they're going to legalize. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a great idea. And I went online and I downloaded the app and I was like, I'm going to set myself up with like a TD investment thing. And then it took too many steps. And then I got high. And I missed it, and then I just
forget this. I tried, I failed.
Yeah. And now I know the inside scoop on everything, and I just have opted to just make real money.
I remember talking to a banker about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and he says, Richard, there is like a 2 week wait to get a TD Investing account. Usually they'd set it up instantly. So there's a 2 week wait because I have people coming into the bank that's never invested before that says, I want to buy cannabis.
So, Richie, did you invest?
I did.
You did?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how'd that go for you? I don't need specifics.
No, it went good. I mean, and I'm almost out of it. The easy money has been made now. It's over, right?
Was it nerve wracking though? Because again,
no.
You were fine.
I knew there was so much potential there.
How come no one tapped me on the shoulder and said, get in.
Well, people will always spend money on drugs. You might not have enough to make the rent for some
That's one thing you know.
But you know people are going to find some money.
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll are always going to sell. Invest. It's true.
However, but the LPs are tanking right now. I mean, the stocks have dropped. So a lot of people are feeling nervous right now.
Because the focus is on how much are we making now that it's legal. The focus is on what are these companies doing? You know, Aphria, one of the biggest companies, they started to look into them. A company they bought in Mexico is just a shack, and they spent millions on it. So there's renewed scrutiny on these companies now.
The Aphria situation is an interesting situation.
They deny it. The company denies it.
Well, you know, I don't know too much about it. I just know that the licenses that they acquired are real licenses. Yeah. Like, they actually exist. So it's not the actual operations that they were paying for. It was the actual license, right? And developing those licenses. But, you know, investment in itself is it's a gamble, right? And sometimes it costs money to play. I know of other companies investing ridiculous amounts of money into licensing and other companies. And, you know, I think if everybody started to really look closely at what was happening, they'd realize that it's an overinflated game all across the board.
Good point.
So
it's interesting that Canada has kind of led the way in this regard. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Canadian cannabis companies are the biggest in the world. That's kind of neat, isn't it?
Well, we're the second federal ever country to legalize, and Uruguay is such a tiny little country, right? And it's interesting because now in Uruguay, what's happening is that the man who owns sort of the biggest cannabis company is running to be the leader of the country. So he's essentially taking over the country.
Have you thought about running for office?
Yeah.
And then she got high.
Yeah, and then I got high. No. You know,
should there be a cannabis party, do you think?
There is one. Marijuana party. It's existed for years. And then the Libertarians.
That's new to me. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the Libertarians are always in favor. I really enjoy my government sort of relations work. And I think I always say, after I retire, save me an office at a lobby firm somewhere. And I'm happy to do that. And
I guess there is the cannabis lobby, I'm sure, right? There's probably a big...
I've been doing it on my own independently with a small group of people for many, many years. You know, the reason that we even have private retail today is because we've literally have spent the last 5 years like living in Queen's Park and sitting with people and talking to people and explaining the market to them, right? When Patrick Brown was leader, we went and had meetings with Patrick Brown, all his assistants. Like, we have close ties with the PC party because they were in opposition. So the Liberals didn't want to talk to us. So I've spent the last 5 years talking to PCs and, right? I really enjoy politics and I enjoy talking to politicians and I enjoy being a part of the fixing the system and not just for cannabis. Mm-hmm. So who knows when I sell out my company, that's my next move in life.
I do want to talk a bit about the business of cannabis. Stats Canada out with some numbers, just looking at the first 2 months of legalization. And so, well, actually over the last year, they're saying that jobs in Canada, weed-related jobs in Canada are up 266% from November of last year. Of course, that's not surprising. We're expecting that.
They pay well, though, don't they,
They pay
Jana?
Well. And so so the jobs, they're saying, Stats Can, $29.58 an hour on average for cannabis jobs in the cannabis industry. And that's compared to the national average of $27 an hour. So it's a really good place to sort of move into right now if you're looking for work or, you know, you want to make a bit more money. And one thing I found interesting, the majority of employees, a whopping 79% are men. Mm-hmm. So in this world of cannabis, is it a man's world right now?
It's always, James Brown would say, it's always a man's world, you know? But, you know, it's funny. I've been in this game for 20 years. And my new board of directors, you know, I'm the only woman. I have a lot of management, executive management women that are coming on board. And there's a lot of women that work in my actual stores. And somebody said to me, they were like, oh, you're bored. You're the only woman out of five or whatever. And I said, but look at my board. We have like a Latin guy. We have a Greek guy. We have two Jews, you know. I call him a gonzo. He's like, nobody knows what he is, right? We're like the United Nations. And I myself represent, you know, I always say, you know, when I started, I was a 19-year-old disabled Jewish woman with dreads. Like, being a woman was like the least of my problem. Being 19 was my biggest problem. Who wants to do business with a 19-year-old? So I've technically been 30 for the last 20 years, because now that I'm 40, I pretend I'm 30. When I was 20, I had to pretend that
you were 30.
Right. So I've been 30 for like 20 years. What a magical thing.
But is the cannabis world more accepting in that regard?
You know what it is? So the legal cannabis world comes from Bay Street, right? Bay Street is very male-dominated. So until we move away from Bay Street owning cannabis and move into the real world, that's the way it's going to be.
Yeah, but Bay Street owns cannabis. That's going to be, that's it.
It's a big
business now, as Shauna points out.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, and for women, you know, another piece of advice that I always say to women is like, nobody does business with their sexual parts. You know what I mean? Like, nobody does that, right? You do business with your brain. And if you can sit in a room full of men and be taken just as seriously as a man because of your ideas and your business-mindedness, then you'll do very well, right? You don't need to look a certain way or, you know, like, you just have to be business-minded. That's what business is about. In the end, money doesn't care what you look like or what size bra you have. Money just wants to be made and keep moving forward. So, you know, for me, I've never seen myself as a woman in cannabis. You know, I actually now have made it a point to turn down every panel that is a woman's panel. I stop doing them. People call me and I say, well, you can put me on a business panel. You can put me on a, you know, on a marketing panel, on a branding panel, whatever you want. Just don't put me on a woman's panel, because I'm so much more than that. And I think my partners really appreciate the fact that I really understand this business and I really understand what I'm doing. So I don't think they have ever felt that these four men that I work with look at me as a woman, you know? So that's a good place to be in.
Guys, good chat. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Thanks for having me.
It's so fun being on the podcast. Thanks, Shauna.
A special thanks to Abby Roach for inviting us in, and to Richard Southern for his knowledge and wit on the subject. Always good banter with this guy. And a big shout out to my producer, Ryan Clark, for making the Legal Podcast possible and for making it sound great. He's also working on a couple other shows right now, including Black Tea. You'll want to check him out. You can find us on frequencypodcastnetwork.com or on your favorite podcast app. Rate us, review us, tell a friend. You can always find me on Twitter at Shauna City News. That's Shauna with a U. Till we meet again. Thanks for hanging out.